us, and we're back with It's All About Food. Thank you for being with me this afternoon on a lovely February 22nd, 2012. And I want to bring on one of my favorite vegan doctors, Dr. Milton Mills. He's the Associate Director of Preventative Medicine with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and co-author of PCRM's report on racial and ethnic bias in the U.S. Dietary Guidelines. Dr. Mills serves as the race and nutrition specialist and board advisor for A Well-Fed World. Whether internist Dr. Mills is practicing at Fairfax Hospital in Virginia or at free clinics in Washington, D.C., his prescription for patients is likely to include some dietary advice. Go vegetarian. Medical research shows conclusively that a plant-based diet reduces chronic disease risk, so that's something I absolutely encourage my patients to move toward, says Dr. Mills, a graduate of Stanford University of Medicine. Dr. Mills doesn't limit his message to patients. He takes it to audiences around the country, as well as speaking at hospitals, churches, and community centers. Dr. Milton Mills, welcome to It's All About Food.
Well, thanks for having me.
Gosh, I've been wanting to talk to you on this show for many, many, many months and a couple of years. How are you today?
I'm good.
Good. I'm remembering the time we actually met, and it was when you were doing one of those wonderful good deeds here in New York City at a church. It was a weekend program on diabetes, I think, something like that.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure how we connected, but the person that was going to be doing the food demos for you got sick or something, and I came in to help you out, and it was really fun.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you again.
Yeah. So I'm frequently saying on this show that we need to rethink the way we feel about food. And I think you agree.
Yes, absolutely. The way I look at it, and the way I try to get people to conceptualize this, is that when most humans think about food, we think about it in a romantic sense. We think about it in terms of, you know, grandma and Thanksgiving and first dates and favorite meals, and we think about the romance of food, but we don't think about what food really is and what it's supposed to do. And quite frankly, one thing I want people to realize is that, you know, food is just a bunch of chemicals. And if I handed you, you know, a bottle of some sort of liquid chemical and said, drink this, first thing you'd ask me is, wait a minute, what is this going to do to me?
That's right.
And that's what we need to start realizing, that when we're putting food in our bodies, we're putting chemicals in our bodies. And these happen to be chemicals that ideally our bodies can derive energy and nutrients from. But those are the kinds of questions that we need to start to ask about the food we eat, because food is supposed to be a vehicle for energy and nutrients. And unfortunately, it now has become just sort of this pornographic escapade in self-indulgence,
yeah,
where, you know, all we care about is what does it taste like, you know, how much fat and grease and calories and salt does it have. But we don't really ask, is this food I'm ingesting really delivering any nutrients to me? One of the most disturbing commercials that I see on TV now days is there's a commercial that comes on where kids are talking about how they don't like spinach, they don't like broccoli, and then their mother pops up and says, "Oh, well, how about if I something to the effect of, how about if I feed you some chicken nuggets?" Which, if you know anything about the way these so-called chicken nuggets are made, you know they're made from basically paste that's collected from scraps in a slaughterhouse, that's processed into these so-called nuggets that are then deep-fried in God knows what. and then fed to children. I mean, they're absolutely nutritionally horrible things to be giving to kids.
Yeah.
But so the message almost is that, you know, if your child doesn't want to eat something nutritious, you can always, you know, feed them some chicken nuggets, and that's going to solve everything. And in fact, it solves nothing, but creates a whole host of different problems.
This is brilliant, and I hope to see a lot more on this concept. The whole idea that food is chemicals, because I think the first reaction most people would have is, what, chemicals? Because when we think about chemicals, we think that they're bad.
Right.
I don't always think they're bad. I studied chemical engineering. I know that there are good chemicals and there are bad chemicals.
I was a chemistry major as well in college, so we're both kind of kindred chemistry geeks.
Yeah, but this is really brilliant, because a lot of people think that chemicals, if it's a chemical, it's toxic, and we don't realize that we are carbon-based, and everything we eat is carbon-based, which is a chemical, and water is oxygen and hydrogen,
right.
And we're breathing chemicals. Chemicals are good. Some of
right.
them.
Right. Well, and we do understand that some chemicals are good, and those are the chemicals that we call medicines. And and so, you know, again, if I come and I say I have this wonderful medicine that's going to, you know, cure all your ills, people are like, ooh, I want some. Let me have it. Well, again, food is a bunch of, this is why food can potentially be curative and restorative for our bodies, because if we put the right kinds of chemicals into our bodies, i.e. the right kinds of foods, then in fact they can have a salutary effect on our health and a restorative effect on our health.
Okay, so how do people start rethinking the way they feel about food?
Well, the first thing is to, again, at some level, to step back and divorce yourself of the romance of it and say that, you know, number one, this is a bunch of chemicals. And when it comes to the amount of chemicals that we will ingest over a lifetime, nothing comes close to the amount of food, with the exception of water, which again is a chemical elixir of its own, but with respect to the amount of chemicals that we will ingest over a lifetime, nothing comes close to the amount of food that we're going to ingest over a lifetime. And given that fact, when you understand that, you realize that, wow, this really can have probably the most important impact on how well I live, how healthy I am, and you know, how well my body will be able to fend off disease and continue, you know, hopefully functioning in a very healthful manner well into, you know, my advanced years. So I think we have to step back and realize, number one, food is a vehicle for nutrients. That's its number one purpose. So everything we eat, rather than sort of saying, well, you know, what do I feel like eating? What is it, you know, what do I feel like tasting? What does it taste like? We need to ask ourselves, what nutrients are in this plate of whatever I am planning to eat? And that requires a little bit of education about, well, what kind of nutrients should we be ingesting? And conversely, what kinds of food chemicals should we be avoiding? So I think that's kind of a first step, is to realize that, okay, I'm actually ingesting, you know, nutritive chemicals. So the question is, what nutritive chemicals, if any, will this food be giving me? And when you take that approach to it, there's no comparison to a bag of cheese puffs and a plate of broccoli.
Yeah, but I can hear people saying, but I like cheese puffs and I don't like broccoli.
And that's right. You're right. And you know what I say to them? Did you ask for those cheese puffs in the delivery room? No. Nobody asked for fried chicken, pork chops, cheese puffs, or ice cream in the delivery room. Everything that people believe they like, they had to learn to like. And just like we were taught to like or to desire things that may not be beneficial for us or healthy for us, we can learn to like things that are good for us. Because let's face it, I mean, this, what we're dealing with are, when you're talking about food, you're dealing with a kind of addictive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you would tell any addict, the issue is not whether or not you like it. If you're talking to someone who has a problem with alcohol or cocaine or heroin, of course they like it, but that's not the issue. The issue is, what is this stuff doing to you? And is it something that is going to be, that's allowing you to live a wholesome, healthy life? Or is this something that is actually tearing apart your body and ultimately going to cause your life to end too soon? And if the answer is the second answer, that it's in fact something that's destructive to your health, something that's going to end your life too soon, it doesn't matter that you have developed a desire for these things, you have to break that addiction and supplant it with something that is better for you. And the bottom line is, just like we learn to like stuff that's not good for us, we can learn to like things that are healthy and beneficial for us. You know, there's this really weird dynamic in American society, and it may even run through Western society to some extent, where there's this idea that things that are pleasurable or things that are fun are necessarily things that are either self-destructive or destructive to the environment.
And are not good for us.
Yes, or not good for the planet. I mean, I see programs on how manatees are injured by boat propellers, or how the wilderness is being torn up by ATVs and snowmobiles, and you know, the first things out of people's mouths is that, well, you know, I have a right to have fun. Well, who says that in order to have fun, you have to do something destructive?
Yep.
You know, we've got to get rid of that idea, and we've got to embrace an ethic that where we understand that we can have fun, we can have, you know, derive pleasure from things that do not destroy our health, and in the larger sense, don't destroy the environment and don't hurt other creatures.
Well, personally, if I know that I'm damaging something, it's not going to be fun. Either.
Exactly.
But, you know, there are lots of different kinds of people out there. So do we all need to become dietitians or nutritional experts?
I don't think you need to be a nutritional expert, but you do need to educate yourself about what you're ingesting. It's just like if, you know, anybody who's going to get ready to go out and buy a computer or a refrigerator or a washing machine.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody understands that the first thing you need to do is not walk into the store and say, hey, I've got a pocket full of money, let me spend it. No. You need to read up on what it is that you need, that you want to buy, which brands are the best, what are the features they offer. You know, you need to educate yourself. This is something practice we readily embrace in other aspects of our lives. Let's stop pretending that when it comes to the things we eat, it's so hard, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more important than what we actually ingest, and then in turn, what we feed to our children. So we have to do the basic education to learn about the food that we eat, to find out what's important, what kind of nutrients we should be ingesting, what kind of things we need on a daily basis, and what kind, and you know, and as I said, what kinds of things to avoid. Just like if I want to go out and buy a new refrigerator, I need to find out how much energy it uses, how much space it has inside, you know how energy efficient it is, and so on and so forth. So you don't have to become an expert, but yes, you do have to educate yourself a little bit. And fortunately, there are now a number of different websites and out there that can help you in this regard by providing this information. I mean, most of the legwork has been done. You just have to kind of go to these sites and read on these things so that you're more familiar with them.
This is good. Milton, this is good stuff. I think about it's funny how we decide what our priorities are.
Absolutely.
or sad, because I like to talk about organic food a lot and how I think it's important for so many reasons, and the first reaction is, but it's so expensive. And then what I usually do is look at their feet and see, you know, some really expensive running shoes that they're wearing.
Right, right.
You know, where are your priorities?
Precisely. And, you know, one of the, at least for me as a physician, one of the greatest ongoing tragedies that I see is that I will see people who will say, yeah, I know it's not good for me, but I like it or whatever. Okay, fine. It's bad enough that you're doing this to yourself. But you know what? In some respect, you don't have a right to do it to your children, because they come into this world as blank slates, and they look to us as adults and parents to teach them the things that they, you know, the skills and give them the knowledge that they need, that they'll need to basically navigate through this world and this life successfully. Why would you intentionally teach your children habits that you know are self-destructive, and teach them dietary habits that you know are going to place their health at risk? That's just not fair. It's absolutely not fair.
People aren't thinking.
No, they're not.
They're just not thinking.
And we need to think. We need to start to think about these things and to realize that, you know what, if you're not going to do it for yourself, you've got to do it for your kids, because they deserve better.
Okay, now you work in a variety of places. As a physician, you do a lot of emergency room work?
Well, actually, critical care and working in the ICUs, yes.
Okay, and so what do you see? What kind of patients come in, and how does that make you feel?
Well, I see the business end of the American diet,
yeah.
Meaning that I see people coming through the door with the heart attacks, with the end-stage kidney disease, with the end-stage liver disease, with the bodies that have been ravaged by a lifetime of ingesting the wrong kinds of chemicals and pursuing the wrong kinds of habits. And yes, of course, a lot of that is a significant portion is through drug use, but the vast majority is because people have spent their lives eating things that have been slowly tearing their bodies apart and tearing their bodies down, and over time, ultimately, their body begins to break down, and their organs begin to suffer permanent damage, and as a result, they end up having, you know, a heart attack, or as I said, and losing so much kidney function that they need to go on dialysis, and so forth, and the great tragedy of all this is that so much of this is avoidable and preventable.
What's amazing to me is how much crap the body can take, that how many decades
Absolutely.
It can take, abuse. That's just mind-boggling. And so what's inspiring there is as soon as you start treating your body better, it heals.
Well, that's true, and every leaf has both an over and under side. And I was just 2 weeks ago, I had been invited to the United States Census Bureau to speak to their they were having a heart healthy month, and they asked me to come and talk about heart health. And one of the points that I made to the attendees at the lecture there was that every 21 days, our heart completely remakes itself.
Whoa.
And that's because the heart works so hard. It pumps over doing your regular daily activities. I'm not talking running a marathon or doing anything special. Your heart's going to pump at least 2,000 gallons of blood a day. And 1 gallon of water weighs 8 pounds. Blood is actually slightly heavier because it has cells and all kinds of other stuff in it. But when you add that up, that's a couple of tons that your heart is doing every day, all day, nonstop, round the clock.
Without complaining.
Yes, a thankless job. Well, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of wear and tear. And so the heart has to continually replace its contractile proteins so that it can go on doing the work that it's constantly, that it's being required to do. And so literally over a 21-day period, the heart completely remakes itself over and over and over again. And the beauty of that is that if you start today by eating a healthier diet, in 21 days you're going to end up with a healthier, stronger heart.
That's nice.
It is.
That's really nice. So do you tell some of these patients what they can do and what's their reaction?
Well, actually, you know, what's really interesting is that sick people are very willing to listen. When people are now, you know, of course you have your knuckleheads who, no matter what, I mean, they're just, they don't seem to get it. But for the most part, when people suddenly realize that, oh my gosh, I actually am mortal, and I just might die because I almost just did die, they are generally, you know, willing to listen to what, you know, what you have to say about trying to do things differently. The tragedy is that, unfortunately, for a lot of people, it's simply too late, meaning that they come in, you know, with such a severe heart attack that they suffer irreversible brain damage, or they don't get to the hospital in time, and their, you know, their heart has suffered irreversible damage, and so they don't really have the option of trying to change their diet and lifestyle to sort of, you know, take advantage of a healthier lifestyle. But for those who do have that option, a lot of them are willing to listen. Now, you know, everybody knows kind of nowadays, if you get a heart attack, first thing you do is you call 911, they whisk you off to the hospital, then they roll you into the cath lab, and they snake a catheter up through your arteries, and they find the blockage in those arteries, and they put a little metal wire cage in there to open up that, called a stent, to open up the blockage and restore blood flow to your damaged heart muscle.
And everything's better.
And the problem is that a lot of times people think, okay, I've been fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, you haven't. Not really. And the analogy that I use is that if you had a, let's say you had some vacation property and you had, you know, 50 acres of vacation property, and running through this 50 acres of vacation property, there were three streams. And the streams were beautiful streams, and there were trees and plants, and, you know, you'd go up and spend summers with your family and have a wonderful time, but you drove up one day and you find that, oh my gosh, a family of beavers had moved in and had dammed all three streams. And now your property is flooded and the trees are dying and everything's a mess. Well, the first thing that you would do is, you know, blow a hole in those dams, correct?
Mm-hmm.
To restore flow to those streams to relieve the flooding. Now, if you did that, would you say to yourself, my problem is solved? Everything's back to normal? No, because you still got beavers.
Mm-hmm.
And until you relocate those, I mean, obviously we don't want to kill the beavers.
No, we
in this
don't.
Instance, we would relocate them. But the point is that if you don't do something to move those beavers to a different place, they're just going to dam that hole back up, and pretty soon your property's going to be flooded again. Likewise, when you have a heart attack, which is a blockage in one of the arteries supplying blood to your heart, when we go in and open up that artery, we have relieved the sort of the acute problem, the situation that places your life at risk, but we have not addressed the underlying disease, and that is the process that was blocking up those arteries. That problem is the things that we have been choosing to eat and the way we've been choosing to live. And until you address and change those issues, you really have not addressed the underlying disease process. And so it's not enough just to get a stent or a bypass. You have got to change your diet and lifestyle so that you will not continue to develop new blockages or re-block those arteries that have been opened.
That's such an important thing, and I don't think a lot of people get that message when they go in and they get
don't.
A stent
that
and they just think,
true.
I'm good to go, and they should get, as part of the fixing or as part of the surgery, there should be a workshop in healthy eating.
Yes, there should be, and yeah. Unfortunately, the problem is that nobody wants to pay for it.
But we're seeing that the money that goes into nutrition training and helping people eat better actually saves money. But
of course it does.
Yeah, we're out of time.
Of course it does.
So we're going to have to pick this up another time, but thank you, Dr. Mills. You are one of the best. Thanks for joining
me. Do you mean to tell me we've gone through our time already?
Yeah. We're all done.
Wow, Karen.
But you're going to have to come
that
back
was
and
too
talk.
Quick.
Yeah, I know. Well, you have a lot of important information to share. Dr. Milton Mills, one of my favorite doctors, thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
thanks,
take care.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, be well. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. And please visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. We make healthy eating delicious and fun and easy and wonderful and whatever. Have a great week.